No, the Stampeders there. With a song that makes no sense, but is just a fun, happy song, Sweet Sooty Woman. Before that, the Turtles, Happy Together. I'm joined by Brian Wallace. Brian, how you doing, man?
Doing great. And you know, I'm in the building when you hear Turtles and Stampeders.
And one-hit wonders from the 70s, yeah. You love them. I love them, too. I'm there, too, man.
Can't get enough.
You were saying that those are kind of bring happy memories back to you of fishing with your dad, huh?
Yeah. Well, actually, we'll start in 1967 when the Turtles came to Fairbanks, and my dad was up there carving two totem poles at the A67 site. It's now called Pioneer Park, but there's two totem poles up there that he carved. And
those are your dad's?
Yep.
Oh, I've seen those.
Yeah.
They're beautiful.
Yeah, they are.
Yeah.
And I remember being in watching Dad carve the totem pole, and a couple guys came by and says, these are the Turtles. And I'm thinking, you know, my best friend David Doyle had a turtle, and I was looking at them and says, like, you ain't a turtle. <It's> like,
So the group, the Turtles, came to Fairbanks and played?
They were the headliner in entertainment that summer, you know, to celebrate the centennial anniversary of Alaska being purchased from Russia.
That would have been a good concert, man. The Turtles, they were great.
Yeah. I know there's several people in town that I knew who were at that concert, too. And like, you were there, yeah.
I was there. We saw the Turtles.
Yeah, great. One of the coolest summers of my life, really.
Yeah.
Big earthquake. Great flood and the Turtles.
The flood was that year as well. Yeah, that's right.
It came up. We were on the second floor of our apartment building, and the water came up just. I mean, to me, it seemed like lightning. It came up so quick.
Yeah.
And then Dad said, "I'm going to go. I go get a boat." And like he goes wading and swimming off into the murky brown water, running in front of where we were staying. And a couple hours later, he shows up with a boat.
Wow. So,
yeah, got the whole family on it, and he lugged us, and he took us to one of the evacuation centers. So he was like, to me, he was like Superman, you know, just in the water, pulling the whole family along in his boat.
Yeah, I imagine. So let's give people a little bit of background on one of the reasons why you're in here, because you've given this great philanthropic gift to the Sea Alaska Heritage Institute of all of your, of a lot of your father's drawings and carvings and things like that. So tell us, just give people a little bit of background if they don't already know Amos Wallace, just sort of a little bit of background about your dad and his place in Native art history.
Well, yeah, and, the middle part of the last century, you know, from like the late 1940s on after World War II, Dad was a very prolific, Tlingit artist. And for the rest of his life, he was producing artwork.
And sort of known for his totems, especially, right? I mean, that's...
Yeah, he was hired to do totem poles all the way from New York City. You know, he has a totem pole standing there. And
Where is that?
It's at the Brooklyn Children's Museum.
Oh, okay.
I went there to see it this spring. You know, just to visit it. It was a great experience.
And that was in 58 when he carved that?
Yeah.
Went on the Jack Parr show.
Yeah, it was
the
on
Tonight
Jack Parr show.
Yes.
Tonight Show. Yeah, he was like, you know, he always made a joke that he was the very first Tlingit TV star.
Right.
Yeah, he was on TV. He was on the Jack Parr show. Then all of a sudden, his army buddies saw him on there, and they all migrated to New York City that week to have a reunion. So that was real cool.
That was
one of the highlights he always talked about. But he was on I found the transcript, and I found the photos of the time he was on the Tonight Show, and he's wearing his Tlingit regalia.
Right.
Yeah, Jack Parr was kind of known as a wise guy, always very condescending humor and stuff. But you can tell my dad was like taking the best punches he can throw, and like
he was the model for Letterman. Sort of, they always say that kind of that sort of sarcastic humor. Yeah, right.
Yeah, it kind of was like reading the transcript. It's like wow. Yeah, I'm glad my dad was such a.
Well, it was a different time, wasn't it? I mean, it was a time when, cowboys and Indians and that sort of idea behind what Native Americans were. And I think that was sort of I'm sure that's the way the humor might have leaned.
Yeah.
And have shown me, of course, you're a great photographer and fascinated in the photography that is of your father. And you were just showing me one of him in Disneyland carving, and he's wearing beautiful, authentic Tlingit regalia, but then in the background is a teepee for him to stay in, apparently. You know?
Yeah,
supposedly.
Right? Yeah, they had to make it as authentic as they could.
Yeah.
we got some photos, actually, of him with the Walt Disney. Mr. Walt Disney was came by and checked out Dad every day.
Yeah.
He was very fascinated by the totem poles. So.
Right, and what sort of tools was he using to carve these totems?
All of his tools, he had several tools that he bought from hardware stores, but most of them were stuff that he bought from, he would go and get leaf springs from old junker cars, and he would forge them into, you know, crooked knives or something called an adze. It's kind of hard to describe an adze. It's like kind of like a handheld bandsaw. You can just, like, you know, shape a piece of wood into a general shape that you want in a hurry
if
with
you're,
it.
If you're skilled.
Yeah,
if you're
skilled. Yeah.
You can do that. He could do that. Yeah, right. And then he carved and did totems, and then was that sort of during a certain period of his life, and then moved on to other sort of, I know I've seen his jewelry, which I think he was concentrating on later in life, right? These beautiful bracelets and things.
Yeah,
like that.
He had his monumental work. His monumental period was like from 1950s to I think maybe 1970. I think the last very large piece that he completed. He did like a 12 or 13 foot pole for a private individual in 1985, but that was the last large piece that he did.
I would imagine it would take it out of you. I mean, that's heavy, real, and that's heavy work to be dealing with a huge tree, to be dealing with carving this thing, to just the multiple kind of hatchet. If you've ever taken a hatchet, try to chop down a tree with a hatchet, you can imagine doing that for weeks at a time.
Yeah, he did if you go up by the Juneau City Museum. My dad's totem pole harnessing the atom was completed in 1967. That was one of three large totem poles that he completed that summer. After he came back from Fairbanks, he was commissioned to do that one. And I remember going down to the subport watching him work on that every day.
Now, when he was commissioned to do these, was he given a theme like harnessing the atom? That's an interesting... I wouldn't have... You know, I'm a layman when it comes to these things. I look at them, I think they're beautiful, but I don't necessarily know the story behind them. So... Tell me about the process of how he would decide on a theme and what the totems, how they would express the meaning.
Well,
I know Beach Baby's going on in the background. Yeah. I know you can't concentrate. I pulled that one out of my hat. Little Beach Baby, some first class. But anyway. Yeah.
Well, for one piece, me and a couple of friends just went to Cincinnati, Ohio, to the... Cincinnati Museum Center there.
And, that was you and Corey, the former editor of The Hooligan here in town.
Yep, the great Corey Keeker.
Yes. And,
so this is an idea I've been working on for years to finally get down there. And finally I said, hey, you know, if I'm not really working, got enough money to go, and it's time to go make a pilgrimage to the totem pole. So Corey wrote this letter in advance to the museum director of the Cincinnati Museum of Natural History. And when we got there at 10 a.m. 2 weeks ago, actually 3 weeks ago, the entire museum staff was there waiting. They wanted to meet the son of Amos Wallace, you know, I was trying to figure out, well, you know, I know he's a big deal, but they were telling me this is the centerpiece of the museum. You know, as soon as you come through, I don't know if you ever walked into like a great cathedral and you can see up the altar where the cross is. Well, it's a large room in a former train station, and right in the middle, you know, bathed in light, is my dad's totem pole.
Wow.
And I just stood there. I
must have been quite a moment for you.
It was
really
a great moment.
Yeah,
it was like the morning light, and I said, there it is. And I just stood at the top of the stairways, and I just like took it in. And
that's great.
I can hear like a lady starting to, you know, she was sniffing herself, kind of starting to, oh, it's such a beautiful moment. It was, you know, I mean, I was really struggling to keep from, you know, losing.
Yeah.
You know, walked down there, checked it out, and then I showed them a letter that was mailed to them by the Shalitos. It was a big department store in Cincinnati, and they're the ones that commissioned Dad to carve the totem pole in 1959. And the head of the department store just sent down, here's some Ohio themes. You know, we like the North Star, you know, because the settlers follow the North Star into Ohio. You know, we like the, you know, the symbol of, you know, the explorer with a coonskin cap on, and then Tecumseh, I'm probably butchering the name, but he was like a great warrior chief in the Ohio region. And so he took these ideas and he put together the totem pole.
Just sort of suggestions for different themes that he might consider, and that's what he ended up using.
Yeah.
Yeah, great. And how about the harnessing the atom one? Do you know the story behind why that was commissioned?
Well, he was trying to figure out, like, you know, that was a free reign one to do.
Okay, and so just, we want a totem,
we want a totem, you do it. And then I was told a story years later that the harnessing the atom was like mom's idea.
Oh,
my
really?
Mom, Dorothy Wallace. She, my late mom, Dorothy Wallace, she died in 2006. She She just like came up with the idea one day and ran it by Dad. And since Mom was the boss, Dad made
complied.
Yes, he made harnessing the item.
Well, tell me then now. So that's a little bit of the history, great totem carver, and then I guess we were going to talk a little bit about his what he sort of became known for after the totems, which was the smaller carving was really his forte, right? It wasn't painting and those. It was really carving.
Yeah, it was carving. Carving was what he's, you know, from World War, you know, before World War II up until maybe the late 60s.
And then he moved into doing some jewelry and doing smaller works and smaller woodworks. Is that right?
Yeah, he started jewelry actually early 60s.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he bought a mill. You know, so he was able to shape the silver into the shape that he wanted.
Mm-hmm.
And then he just, one night, he got a book, How to Engrave.
Yeah.
And I still have it. I have that book. And he made his first bracelet for Mom, and it was just this beautiful piece, photographed with her, and she took it with her and married her. So,
oh, that's great, yeah. And so he started that sort of form of doing that stuff. Now, tell me a little bit about what the contribution that you made to Sea Alaska Heritage Institute. What's the bulk of that, of those contributions? I know that some of it is drawings of the totems,
yeah,
and things like
actually,
that.
Actually, my dad died in 2004, and then down in the basement in the house.
Yeah, you've been sifting through stuff ever since.
I've been sifting through stuff ever since because Mom and Dad were like, pack rats. You know, Mom, they kept everything, and it drove me nuts every time I went to the house. And I'm like, it's in the basement. If something was in the basement, then it was like,
lost.
It was like a loss. It was a black hole. It was like, you fall in, nothing comes out.
Seven bikes.
Yeah. I found old bikes, we had old phonograph that we had a hi-fi that we bought, and we hooked it up for an aerial for the AM reception, and the one thunderstorm in the 1950s and the one lightning bolt that ever hit a house hit
Is that
it
right?
and blew it apart. So and so that became a table. That was a table for 50 years in the house.
Right.
But anyway, sifting through all the stuff, I finally got it. I'm starting to get it organized. And earlier this spring, I opened up one box and I discovered two photos that were just mildewed and they were destroyed. Now I could barely make out my dad, and I could see the group of Boy Scouts that had come to watch Dad carve a totem pole in Cincinnati. And you couldn't make out the writing anymore. And I was just heartbroken. And I didn't want that to happen to the rest of the collection.
Right.
So, I immediately started, organizing faster, like around the clock. And then I approached Sea Alaska Heritage Institute, whether or not if they'd accept it to be the caretaker of my dad's archives. And they were very happy to do that. So,
and it's so cool is that this is going to be one of the mainstay collections in the Walter Sobolev new facility that's going to start breaking ground in a year or so,
Right. Walter Sobolev was a very special man for the family of pretty much everybody in town.
He
was one of the dad's best friends, and it's just so great to know that my dad's memory is going to be preserved in the building named after Dr. Sobolev.
Very cool. Well, Amos Wallace's work is going to be available then for all of us to go and see, but tell folks a little bit about, if they want to just check out, there's the one we just mentioned at the City Museum. Are there other little places around town where you can, I know that there's some over in the Gold Belt Hotel as well, some of his smaller carvings.
Some smaller carvings, but actually if you want to see two totem poles around, they're around 10 feet, and they are in the entrance of the Federal Building, the Juno Federal Building downtown.
Oh, okay. All right. Those are his. All right.
So those are his. Those are like the three main pieces that are in town right now.
Okay.
And I think sooner rather than later, Sea Alaska Heritage is going to start putting what I've donated online, photographs, and then line all the drawings.
All right. Great.
Like I said, I'm just pulling this number,
sure.
800 to 1,000 pieces of paper and photographs to them, and then they're organizing it, and like I says, it's going to be used for teaching. And I know a local artist has already, he came up and showed me, hey, this eagle's inspired by your dad. So it's
there
great.
You go.
And my dad's gone 8 years and he's still, his
Well, I'm sure he's inspired many thousands of people in Cincinnati and New York and here in Alaska and everywhere his artwork is. It's beautiful. Yep. As you know, it's beautiful artwork. Brian, thanks so much, man. It's just great to know about this collection, that this is in the works, and thanks so much for making that contribution to the public.
Yeah, thank you. If you can play some more 70s pop, it'll just totally make the night here.
How do you think about a little bit of King Harvest?
I'm there. All right, let's go dance in the moonlight here.
Get it almost every night, and when that moon gets a bit